Everybody, I'm Don. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
I'm really, really grateful to be here. Thank you very much, Billy, for asking me to come. It wasn't so very long ago that people told me to get out, leave, don't ever come back, get there, go away, right? And it's changed some. I'm probably going to bounce around a little bit, but hopefully it'll all tie together. But to tell you who I am, what I'm all about, there's a favorite chapter of mine. It's the last one. AA taught him to handle sobriety. God willing, we may never have to deal with drinking, but we have to deal with sobriety every day. And the last paragraph on that chapter is probably one of my favorites, if I can get to the right section. Above all, we reject fantasizing, and I did a ton of that. Right? As a kid, even, I fantasized about all kinds of things. We reject it and accept reality. The more I drank, the more I fantasized everything. And that's just the way I was. I imagined getting even for hurts and rejections. My boss is an idiot, my kids, my wife, my neighbors, blah, 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 right? Hurts and rejections. In my mind's eye, I played and replayed scenes in which I was plucked magically from the bar where I stood nursing a drink. That's a lie. I don't know anything about nursing a drink. Nothing whatsoever. And I was instantly exalted to some position of power and prestige, right? I wanted to be a big hero. That's enough out of that for now, but that's me. And it all started as a kid, right? I should jump in there somewhere else and jump around a little bit. While I was drinking, I worked for this big computer company, and I was hungry. And I wanted to get ahead. So I got a job that would teach me how to be an executive type manager. And I was taught how to write and how to this and how to that and how to do public speaking. And I went to this 30-day class one time, and it was brutal. We stayed up until 2, 3 in the morning studying and doing things. And each one of the persons in the class had a monitor or a sponsor, if you will. And one day we were doing flip chart presentations. There's the flip chart right there. So this sponsor guy of mine and I end up in this old computer room that is empty, kind of like this raised floor. And the cables were underneath the floor to hook up these gigantic machines together, and they had holes in the floor. And there was this flip chart. So I'm doing the flip chart business, and I take the cap off the magic marker, and it falls into the hole. And I get down on my hands and knees and continue. And everything's fine. Next morning, that sponsor guy of mine shows the video to the entire class. And what you see on the screen is my big rear end sticking up. And everybody's hollering and everybody's hooting, right? And that's me. That's what I look like. So anyway, going way, way, way back, why am I an alcoholic? I really don't know. I don't know if it's inherited. I don't know if I drank too much, but I don't like the not know answer. So I come up with one. And I'm going to tell you that my mother put my diapers on backwards and she put the safety pins in the back instead of the front. That's why I'm an alcoholic. And that's just the way it went, right? So as a kid, I'm afraid of a ton of stuff and I'm selfish and I don't even know those words, but that's the way I am. And I don't know how to tell anybody that I am. So I'm an arrogant chicken, right? I got this big ego. And I'm scared to death to tell anybody what's going on inside of me. My dad was a farmer as a kid. He grew up on a small type of a farm. And later on, he had a job being a groundskeeper in this mansion. And it had a gigantic yard, big tall fences around it. And it was a perfect place for me to play all by myself. Nobody else around. And way back in the corner, Dad had a chicken coop, a dozen chickens and a rooster. One evening, he asked me to, late afternoon maybe, he asked me to go gather up the eggs. And I go out there and there's the shadows on the wall and the mice getting the chicken feed. And I'm afraid of that rooster. right? I'm this tall, and the rooster is about like yay. And that rooster comes pecking at me every time I go into that chicken coop. Had a fence all around it, roof and so forth. And the only way I would go in there is with a switch that I broke off a bush, and I'd beat the snot out of that rooster until it left me alone. So this one particular evening, I pick up the eggs and I drop one, and it breaks. And I know I'm going to get into trouble when I get back to the house. So I pick up the shells, scuff up the soil so it doesn't look like anything, and I probably a 200-yard walk back to this big house. We had this little apartment up in the attic. And I throw the shells into some bushes. Dad said, "Where's the 12th egg?" I said, "That's all I got." He said, "Okay." 2 weeks later, he found those shells. He's holding them in his hand. And guess what I did? I turned around and ran away. And that's my style. I turn around and run away. Right? I run away with drinking. I run away with you name it. I can do it with sugar, with ice cream, and on and on and on. I can go shoe shopping, right? I can do all kinds of goofy stuff that leads into the addiction role. So I'm floundering along. And to tell you a little bit about me, when it comes to the games in school, like a softball game, I'm the last one picked. Right? I always said that I played left out. Right? And that's the way it felt. Right? It felt irritable discontent. And those words are in here. They weren't in here. And I continue that. And in high school, I found the salvation. I found the guys who were drinking, and I joined them, and I was okay. Until I wasn't. And that didn't take very long. Right? And I started feeling guilty because I started doing stupid things. A friend of mine asked me to come over to another friend's house, and I threw up all over the living room carpet. Don't even know it, but I did. Next day, he takes me back to the house, and the man and the woman of the house say, "Why did you throw up all over my..." Right? The guilt and the shame and the embarrassment, and that just goes on and on and on. I joined the service. That was a drink fest. I got into lots of trouble there. Nothing serious, but I got into a lot of trouble. Got out of the service and you get a job, this job that I was talking about. And the rule says you got to get married and you got to have a family and all that. And my wife and I were drinking buddies for a while. And when she wanted to start a family and got pregnant, she stopped. And guess what? I couldn't. I couldn't do it. So I call her up at 5:30. I'm going to go to the corner bar and have a drink. 6 o'clock, I'm just going to finish this one. 7 o'clock, I'm just going to have a couple more. 10 o'clock, I stop calling and I get home 1 in the morning. And she's lying in bed, her eyes about that big around, angry as all get out. And how should I feel? Right? This went on for a long, long time. I drank for 20 some odd years and it didn't get easier. It didn't get better. And I tried not to drink. One side of the head says do, the other side says don't. That's a miserable place to be. That is awful. Right? And it didn't work. And like it says in here, once I take that first drink and I get that relief and I'm okay again. And then I drink the second one and the 10th one and you know what happens then, right? That's the way it goes. And I don't know how to talk to my then wife. Right? We talk about the grocery shop and talk about getting gas for the car, house insurance and things, but I don't talk about how I feel, what's going on inside of me. I'm scared. I can't say those words. I'm afraid to say those words. And that's me. Right? So we have the children, and they grow up. My daughter is maybe 10 years old, and at the time, I belong to the YMCA Indian Guides, and I take my daughter out to a weekend camp out. Get back home, my wife opens the door. My then wife, I've gotten divorced since then, She opens the door and says, "Why were you drunk all weekend?" Now, how did she know that? Right? How did she know that? Did my daughter squeal? Did she just know? But how do I feel like about it? And I want to drink. And I do. And that goes on and on and on. Oh, this class that I took, right? How to be a, they had the flip charts and the thing. Somewhere in that class, I was told a little fact. And the fact is that I should never, ever, ever dress better than my host. Right? He's not wearing a jacket, so why should I? That's what I was told, right? That's what I was told. So there we are. Right? So I did learn something in that time. And I did get to be that manager. And guess what happened? A little while later, I drank myself out of that job. And that's just the way my life went. Right? So now I'm working for that company. And one day, we had a medical department. One day, the physician calls me into his office and says, "I want to talk about somebody." Tense. So I go in there, and how's this guy doing? He wants the medical discharge, blah, 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 blah. And I say, okay. We talk about him for about 5 minutes. The rest of the hour, he's spent talking about me. And he asked me a question. "How much do you drink?" And I told him the truth. That was a mistake. I told him the truth. Right? And he said, "Take your wife out to dinner and don't drink. Go take a weekend, go somewhere in a fancy hotel, get a babysitter, and don't drink. And do this and this and this and don't drink." I left his office and I said, "That guy's a flaming idiot." Because by then, the only way to go out to dinner is stop off at the bar after work, get a six-pack on the way home, pick up my wife, go to the restaurant. Couple before dinner drinks a bottle of wine with dinner. She drinks that much, I get the rest. Something after dinner and maybe something on the way home. That's the way to go out to dinner. And he doesn't want me to do that. So now comes a really hard part of my story, the one I don't like to tell. But it might be good for me to do so. 2 weeks later, I'm supposed to see the doctor in a month. 2 weeks later, I get home one day doing the same stuff. And I'm angry at my wife. She's angry at me. And I want to hit her. Not, but hit. And she just stood there, looked me in the eye, and said, "Why don't you go upstairs and load up one of your guns and shoot me and the kids?" And I turned around, ran out of the house, got in the car, went to a liquor store, and I don't remember the rest of it. I don't know what happened. 2 weeks later, I go to the doctor, and he said, "How many of those things did you do that I asked you to do?" And he turned over a big piece. I told him none. He turned over a big piece of paper and said, "Had you said anything else?" And there was a great big zero on that piece of paper. So he knew me better than I. He asked me if I thought it was too much that I was drinking. And I was truthful again, and I said, "Most of the time it is." He picked up the phone, called somebody in rehab. And here's the great part. He told me to go back to the office and tell my boss to drive me to the rehab center. Am I supposed to tell him the truth? Come on. You got to be kidding. But I did. Because he said, "I might get fired if I do not do what he suggests." Now that means I don't have a job, I don't have any money, I don't have booze, I'm in real trouble. So I did. And those nice people in the rehab center talked about steps 1, 2, and 3. And that was just so-so. I said, "Yeah, yeah, I got all this stuff. I know. Yeah, I know how to do that. Yeah, I agree. I believe." Lip service. But what they did that was so smart, they put me into a van. I didn't want to go, but you got to go. And they took me to meetings. And I'm sitting there just, my jaw just drops because you guys and people like you are talking about all the things that I'm afraid to talk about. And I'm saying, how can you do that? How can you guys just do that so easily? And I'm sitting there scared to death and can't move. So I'm hanging around for a long, long time. And I'm pretty smart. I tell everybody I'm doing the steps. I'm probably lying or telling big fibs anyway, because there's a step five that says I gotta tell you guys what kind of a jerk I am. And I am not going to do that. And I know everything there's to know about me in step four. Why do I have to write it down like you guys suggest? I know everything is, I mean, why do I have to write it down? Step three is okay. Step two, I'm not insane. Step one, yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol when I drink too much, but those 3 days a year when I don't, I'm okay. And my life's unmanageable when I drank so much that I can't get out of the car to get into the house. But most of the days I can, so that's okay. I mean, you got the house, you got the mortgage, you got the cars, got all that stuff. What's the big deal? I'm lying to myself. In year five, six, seven, I'm not sure. I grabbed my brother, who got sober before I did, and I said, I'm going to do a fifth step. He got afraid. I got afraid, and I'm stumbling through these things. And halfway done, he says, what about your fears, your angers, your, yeah, I got all that stuff. That's my fifth step. So I didn't feel so good about doing the process correctly. And at least I was smart enough to talk to some old geezer in a meeting somewhere along the line. And he said, why don't you go back in the steps and figure out which ones you had not done? Well, I told you how a lousy job I did before. I didn't write anything down. Three, yeah, two, yeah, one, yeah, I'm lying to myself. And it wasn't until I got honest with me in step one, totally honest, that I could go forward and say, hey, I need some help. And step two is there to help. And step three tells me to make a decision to get that help, to do the help. Now, step three was a big problem for me. There was a guy in one of the meetings who said, you got to let go. You got to turn it over. And I'm saying, cool. That is really, really cool. If I have a problem, I just got to go turn it over and I don't have that problem anymore. So why do I need to do the rest of the steps? That's what I'm thinking. And how do you turn it over? I don't know. I have no clue on how to do that. So I got to keep hanging around until somebody tells me how to do it. I live just north of D.C. a little ways, and I have to drive to D.C. for something. And there are a bunch of over and under passes on 270. And one August day, it's hot. I got the air conditioner running in the car. And I'm driving down there, and I got to let something go. I'm angry at one of the bosses, and I got to let it go. So I sing the words, let it go, to that Christmas carol, let it snow. And I get underneath one of the underpasses and I come out the other side and it's gone. So nowadays, when you see me driving back and forth underneath that underpass, it'll be because I got to get rid of a problem. Right? That's a bad joke. At least some of you are laughing a little bit. I should bone up on my joke telling. So I mumble around, right? So now I got five, six, 7 years in AA, and I'm just barely starting, but I'm not drinking, and I'm miserable. I don't tell anybody that. And in the meantime, my wife had asked me for a divorce because nothing at home changed. This happened about 6 months or so, maybe a little less, after I stopped drinking. I wasn't sober, and sober being of sound mind and at peace. Abstinent means I'm not drinking. I wasn't sober by any means. I wasn't peaceful, right? But I was abstinent. So she wants a divorce. And I am saying, I just got sober and you want to get out of Dodge? And I was furious. Today, I wonder why she put up with me for as long as she did, because I certainly would not put up with anybody who did what I did to them. I wouldn't do that. So I'm back in the meetings. Sometimes I go to two or three, or maybe even, I don't think I've ever done four, but I've done three a number of times. And I keep going back to meetings. And that's the greatest advice that I ever heard. Just please keep coming back. And I'm such a chicken that I like to listen to certain people and like to repeat what they say. There was a guy named Bob Welch. His favorite saying was, "I was so unaware that I was unaware." Right? I didn't know what I was doing. And while I was drinking, the only thing for me to do is drink more. And then there's John Pierre, a little French, Belgian guy, had this big French brogue accent. He and I used to stand on the steps of the church after the meeting, and I would whine about all my problems. My boss is an idiot. The guys at work don't do what I want them to do. The bathrooms are dirty. Traffic sucks. And he says, "Well, I'm retired. I don't have those problems." But if you go to meetings and you don't drink and you talk to somebody and you help somebody and you say your make your prayers, he would say, you'll be okay. Hey, Jean-Pierre, then there's my family. My kids don't take out the trash when I ask them to. My wife, blah, 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 and the neighbors and the fences and the work. He said, "Well, my wife passed away. My kids moved out to California. I'm in an old folks home. I don't have those problems." "Hey, Jean-Pierre, you don't..." Oh, then he would say the same thing again, right? "Go to meetings, make your prayers, don't drink and so forth, talk to your sponsor." "Hey, Jean-Pierre, you don't have a clue." "Yeah, that might be true. But if I go to meetings and if I make my prayers and if I talk, I'll be okay." That works then and it works today, right? The thing that stopped me from drinking was you folks and people like you. Like I told you, I tried church, I tried therapy, I tried white knuckling it. I couldn't do it. But you guys did it. Now, how did you do that? 12 steps, companionship, fellowship, AA, God, higher power. That little physician that got me into recovery, I called him my guardian angel. And how did I get sober? I can tell you how. I can't tell you why. But I don't like not knowing why. So I come up with an answer. And that answer for me is grace came along and grabbed me. That's what happened. Grace came along. Someday I'd like to meet her. She came along and grabbed me. Right? I don't think I had much to do with it. I just showed up. The only thing, smart thing I did is I kept coming to me, and sort of by osmosis. Oh, there's a guy, Oz, I think was his name. No, his name is Mo. And he said he brings his Oz to the meetings and gets it by osmosis. Meaning, yeah, that's what he's saying, right? So I like to repeat some of the stuff that some of the people have said. Because I didn't invent any of this. I did not come up with any of the answers. I tried, couldn't do it. You guys had the answers. Right? So now I was somewhere talking about step four and step five. And then came six. Six is pretty neat, except for the words entirely, ready, not all. Everything else is pretty cool in that step. And then seven, right? How do I do that? I keep coming back to meetings and let you guys tell me how to do it. And the more I come to meetings, the more I want to be wholesome, healthy, and less of a jerk than I was yesterday. And what is God's will for me today? Just that. To be less of a jerk today than I was yesterday. Do I succeed? Sometimes, most of the time. But all of the troubles that I have today are not as strong as they used to be. They don't last as long. We don't have the effect that they used to, and you guys told me how to fix them. And I didn't know to do that. And I didn't know how to fix those. The only way I could fix a problem in the old days is more. Right? And I'm running away from the problem is what I'm doing. Running away. Oh, here's a cool little story. A little while after the divorce, excuse me, I get a letter in the mail from the bank saying that my checkbook's overdrawn. Okay. How do I do that? How do I balance my checkbook? I look and it looks okay. Everything looks fine. But what's going on? So I get really, really smart. I get a bill from the power company. And I go to the bank, to the teller, and say, give me a cashier's check. Take it out of my savings account. And then I'll use that cashier's check to pay the bill. And I do that for the bills. After about the third or fourth time, the teller says, I know exactly what you're doing. She says that, and I'm looking at her, and I want a drink. Because she's telling me I'm a jerk, is what she's really telling me. One day after a month of this, I go to a different teller, and I tell her the truth. I bounced my check. I don't know how to balance my checkbook. I feel really stupid. She opened a drawer, handed me a piece of paper, and says, you and 20 million other people don't know how to do that. Here's the answer. I mean, is that simple that all I have to do is ask somebody and they give me the answer? Now, how many times did I flounder around in the early meetings when the folks were going out to coffee after the meeting and they didn't invite me? Right? Didn't invite me personally. And somebody said, why didn't you just ask and go along? What? Is that doable? Is that allowed? I don't know. And not knowing doesn't make me stupid. It makes me unaware. But I used to think and feel stupid when I think that you think that I'm stupid. Right? But all it is that I am not aware. And I'm a chicken, and I'm too afraid to ask for help. Right? So where was I? Step six, seven, somewhere in there? Eight and nine. Oh, eight and nine. I got to tell somebody I'm sorry, huh? As a high school kid, I worked in an outdoor fruit market. The boss, the owner, son-in-law, and other people worked there. The son-in-law tells me one day that there's this rich dude in town and he cheats him when he's checking out. He adds some money to the bill. So instead of paying 20 bucks, say he pays $23. So me wanting to be a hero, do the same thing. And I get caught. And the guy says, I am much worse than the son-in-law. So he knew all along what was going on. So now I'm in AA, I'm not drinking, I'm doing this. And all of a sudden, this thing is hanging over my head. Right? I stole some money from this guy. And how do I fix that? I look him up on the internet, can't find him. But he was, he had a benevolent, or his family had a benevolent blood bank. So I wrote them a letter saying exactly what I did. And I don't know how much money I took them for. So I don't know. I sent them a check for $200, figuring that was enough interest and whatnot. Probably too much, but doesn't matter. And I got a letter back saying thank you, but no mention of what I actually wrote. Like what I wanted them to acknowledge that I did the hero thing, right? And I wanted them to tell me that, oh, that's okay, you're a poor guy. Yeah, that's me. So the good news is that now I don't have to fuss and worry so much about having done that amend. You know what the bad news is? I keep getting requests for more money from those folks. But it's not so bad because it doesn't hurt. like the other one did, right? So how do you do amends to the family? Right? My parents, my brother, my wife. She wanted a divorce, she got it. I went back to her, tried to make the amends, tried to get her to go back. Too much water under the bridge. I don't want anything to do with you. Can't blame her. It hurts. But how do I do it with the kids? My daughter ends up in a party school. I'm not sure that there are any schools where there isn't a party. But it's in Durango, Colorado. So I get out there one day. And my daughter says, between this and this town out in the west, do the speed limit. I'm a little heavy on the gas, and I get a speeding ticket. So I get to my daughter's house, and it's a party scene. There's trash all over the place, and she smokes pot through a grapevine. I mean, through a grapefruit, sorry. Through a grapefruit. Little hole cut in the top with a little aluminum funnel and a straw sticking. Why? Well, it takes some of the harshness out of the smoke. Okay. And her boyfriend's sitting on the couch doing one of these. And I tell her, can I have some of that stuff that he's got? Because that looks like so much fun. And she throws me out. And it gets worse. The relationship between she and I get worse. And it keeps getting worse. I hate you. Send money. Right? Keeps getting worse. Today, it's not worse. Today, it's great. And I guess the only thing I can say about all of that is I probably went to a few Al-Anon meetings, kept quiet, tell her that I love her instead of harping on her for that she shouldn't be doing this, she shouldn't be doing that, she shouldn't be doing that. Today we have a marvelous relationship. And I am so grateful that I didn't, but I wanted to tell her to never, ever, ever see me, talk to me, anything again. I wanted to do that. And I'm so glad I didn't. Because today we do nice stuff together. So what magic do you guys perform next? What are you going to do to me that will make me even happier and more joyful than what I am today? Right? That's what goes on in here. You take my troubles and you twist them around until it's okay. Who else can I do that? So where are we? Step 8 and 9. I ended up not liking my father too much, maybe even hating the guy. And it wasn't necessarily his fault. He was in the World War I thing. And he probably came out of that banged up a little. He ended up beating my mother up. And she got a divorce. Oh, here's another little good story. After the divorce, my mother and brother and I moved into the basement apartment of this lady's house. Her family must have felt for us and allowed us to live there. The first Christmas, I'm probably 12, 13 years old. The first Christmas, her grandchildren come with presents. My brother and my mother go upstairs to be in the living room with the family, and I'm hiding under the bed. My brother comes down, looks for me, and I'm not going up. He goes back upstairs and says, that turkey brother of mine is laying under the bed hiding. How do I feel? I want a drink. That was back then. But today, my brother and I are doing well. And we were butting heads together, too. There were 2, 3 years that we didn't talk. Because he did something that upset me. And why should I talk to the guy? He's a jerk. And look what I missed. I missed 2 or 3 years of a relationship because I'm arrogant. I'm cocky. So that was step 8 and 9, maybe. 10, continue to take personal inventory. Why? Because it's easier to get rid of a problem sooner than it is for me to hang on to it longer. That's a good enough reason. Right? If I screw something up, make the effort. Oh, and one of the job things. I at one time had a job where I wrote proposals for some big bank companies. And I was doing two of them at the same time. And I switched. I didn't mean to do that. I apologize. But I switched a section from one proposal and put it in the other, vice versa. My team lead called me up one morning just yelling and screaming and hollering. And what do you want me to do? I apologize. He said, there's a conference call in 20 minutes. You better be on it. And a bunch of executives, and I'm just scared, right? And this one guy gets on and says, I make my apologies. I'm sorry I did that. One of the execs gets on, hey, Jim, you take care of this. Tom, you do this. Joe, you do this. And Jim, or the other Jim, or whatever. And we'll be done in a half an hour. That was the end of that. Right? So all of the fighting, all of the fear, all of the stuff I have rolling around inside of me is wasted. But I sit in it because that's what I'm used to. And you guys are teaching me how not to do that. I would have liked to see that the team lead's face when they told him that we'd be done in a half an hour. That would have been fun to see, but I didn't get to see that. That would have been a little revenge, right? And revenge tastes best. What do they say? I don't know. There's a saying about revenge tasting best when I stick myself with a needle in the eye or something. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't do much good. So personal inventory. When I screw things up today, admit it, talk about it, tell the truth. And I used to lie about everything, seems like. Couldn't keep up with it. 11. Oh, here we go. God stuff, right? Seek through prayer and meditation. For the longest time, I said, I don't know anything about meditation. I don't know anything about it. What I do today, I say the Serenity Prayer in four stances, breathe in and out for each one. Try to do that 10 times without getting a thought that says something else. Now, how successful do you think I am? Every once in a while, I get to complete that task, but not very often. Right, because I get to like 4 or 5, and I think, did I leave the gas on and the stove downstairs? Right, or do I owe a bill to the or thing? But I try. Right? And if I get to the 10, I'm pretty much assured that I can fall asleep pretty easily. Prayer and meditation. And what about God? What do we know about God? Not much. A bunch of us AA guys go on a retreat in the Shenandoah Valley at an abbey. And there was a monk there who has been there for, I don't know, 600 years. He was a prince of a guy, an old-looking guy with a beard. And one day I walk in there and he says, hey, Tom, what's wrong? And maybe I had a long face or something, I'm not sure. And I didn't want to sound real stupid and say, I don't know. So I came up with my best intelligence and I said, I think I'm wrestling, trying to find God. And he looked at me, he stroked his beard and he said, you too? Yeah, you too. So what do I know about God? I know that I got here and you guys grabbed me by the scruff of my neck and drug me into sobriety. Some of you did that with God. Some of you did it with strength. Some of you did it with the steps. Some of you did it by ignoring me, telling me to go somewhere else. And all sorts of things happened to me in those years when I first got here. But it worked. And I'm grateful for that. Right? I'm grateful for it. Like I mentioned earlier, thanks for bringing me out here. Because in the old days, people told me to go away. They don't do that today so much. I think it's been a long time since somebody told me to do that. Prayer and meditation. Oh, I'm driving on 270. Somebody cuts me off. What do you think I want to do? I want to take him out behind the woodshed and teach him some manners is what I want to do. And even if I have to chase him all the way from Bethesda to Gaithersburg or to Gettysburg, I'll be more than happy to do that as long as I get my... Right? But what happens if I say a little prayer that says help or please help or God help? What happens? I get a moment of stop, a moment of rest, a moment of reflection, a moment of peace maybe, and I get to make a decision. Down on the gas pedal or up on the gas pedal? And then comes the hard part. I got to do something. Just thinking about it isn't going to fix it. I got to do something. Right? And I have a choice to do something. Fairly early on in my recovery, I'm out in Colorado visiting my brother. And I get to this meeting on the wrong side of the tracks. A whole bunch of riffraff in that meeting, kind of like you guys. And the chairperson somehow asked some people if they were alcoholics. They said, no, we smoke a lot of pot. He told them to get out because that was an AA meeting. And I jumped up and I said, the tradition says, third tradition, I think, says the only requirement, you didn't ask the right question. You asked them if they were alcoholics. Doesn't say anything about alcoholics. If you don't shut up, I'm going to throw you out too. So the entire meeting, I'm sitting there thinking about what am I going to do to this guy after the meeting? That's all I'm thinking about. The last person that shared was a Sioux from the nation in the Dakotas. He looked like one, he talked like one. And he said that he has disease of alcoholism inside of him. And it reminds him of having two dogs inside of him. And these two dogs continually fight. There's the sober dog and there's the drunk dog. And he asked the group, which one of those dogs do you think wins the fight? Those guys were a little more vocal than you guys are, and they came up with all kinds of answers, and he kept shaking his head. And he said, the stronger dog wins the fight. Feed the right dog. And that's the first time I heard that, but since then I've seen posters and I've seen all kinds of things like that. But that's the first time I heard it. Now, why do I remember that a number of years later? Because it sticks in my heart, right? And a lot of these things that you folks say stick in my heart. I keep coming back like John Pierre. I'm aware that I'm unaware. And there are a number of those things. God. Grace, right? Grace grabbed me. Same thing? Maybe. Praying only for the knowledge of his will for us. Is he going to tell me? Will I use my own instincts, my own wisdom to figure that out? Or will I get help from you guys? By myself, I couldn't figure out how not to drink. You guys did it for me. So I have to rely on the wisdom of you folks to tell me to do for certain things. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening, what does that mean? Means that I got smart, means that I woke up, means that I told the truth, Oh, there's a whole section in here about spiritual awakening. As the result of these steps, right? I can't get that spiritual awakening without working the steps, it says. Is that true? I don't know. I work the steps. I'm not sure that I work the steps. I'm not sure I like that word, work the steps. I think I do them. I live them. I participate in them. I'm not so sure about working. Working kind of like means a chainsaw or a shovel or a pickaxe or something like that. We try to carry this message to alcoholics. That's what you guys are doing for me today. You're just sitting there laughing, not saying anything. You're telling me that if I participate, I'll be okay. That's what you're telling me right now. I do some service work. There's a jail not too far from my house. I take a couple of meetings a month in there. And those guys help me. They don't think so, but they're helping me because I probably deserve to be wearing one of those green jumpsuits just like they do, because I've done enough stupid driving things. And I don't know if I got lucky, didn't get lucky, didn't get enough trouble, didn't hurt anybody. I don't know. But I'm here today, and I get to go there and get to talk to them a little bit. And practice, that's my favorite word. I get to practice this stuff, right? And when I screw it up, I get to practice it some more. And I keep practicing because things happen that I don't like. I get resentments, I get anger. I get, oh, the reason I'm an alcoholic. I used to have an uncle that would come over with a six pack of beer, or maybe only a couple, I don't know. And occasions I would get a sip of his beer. I was 5, 6 years old, I don't remember. And I didn't get drunk off of that sip, but I felt like a powerful person, right? I was catered to, I was loved, I was something. And on those days when I didn't get that sip, guess what I felt? The resentment, right? That's what I felt. Practice these principles in all my affairs. Can I do that? I try. Do I succeed? Sometimes, most of the time. In the days when I was drinking, go to the grocery store and the checkout clerk would run out of cash register tape. I wouldn't have to say a word, but I could just look at them and they would know that I was unhappy. Not too long ago, some young woman ran out of cash register tape, and she's fumbling around. She's really nervous, trying to hustle because there's a line. And I tell her to slow down, because if she drops that tape, it's going to roll on the floor 20 feet, and it's going to take her 10 minutes to roll back up and stick into the machine, and all these guys over here are going to be really upset. So slow down and take it easy. Now, where does that come from? From you guys. You guys did that for me. You made the difference in my life, from being a self-centered jerk to today, sometimes a reasonable person. And what you've given me is a reasonable life. And you and countless other people, and the guys who did this, and the guys who started this, and the steps, and the sponsors that I asked to be a sponsor and didn't call them. All of those guys early on, everybody in the meeting, even the jerks in the meeting, they do something for me. All of these things matter. And what I have today is a mighty, mighty reasonable life. And I'm grateful for it. Billy and I were talking about it. It took me a couple hours to get here today. And not so long ago, I was on the AA chat room when the internet first came out, and there was a guy from some little town in Idaho that I'd been through a number of years back, and I asked him what he was doing in this chat room, and he said, "This is my meeting, capitalized M-Y, And I said, what an arrogant SOB thinking that is, this is his chat room, this is his meeting. And I asked him about it. He said, the nearest meeting to my house is 60 miles away, once a week. And this is where he goes to get some help. And how grateful am I to be living in that DC area where DC, Prince George's County, Montgomery County, they have 1,200 meetings a week. And I get to pick and choose. Right? And I don't want to some days. Because what I am is very selfish, driven by 100 forms of fear. And you guys are fixing that slowly, but you're fixing it. Am I out of time? Is this good enough? Oh, I got 5 minutes. I could probably come up with a couple more lies. I'm about out. The regrets that I have today of having had this tumultuous life that I had is that I wish I would have learned or wish I would have known how to love the people who I'm supposed to have loved instead of loving alcohol more than what I did. Right? And I don't know how to make up for that except to do these things that we talk about in here. I'm grateful. I'm grateful to be here. Thanks for asking me. And I think I'll sit down.